Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the Pot of Thunder and Rock and Roll. And today, New Japan Pro Wrestling's rising star, Clark Connors, makes his Talk is Jericho debut. Clark's explaining how he got the last-minute opportunity to wrestle at the Forbidden Door pay-per-view after Ishii was injured. It was literally a couple days before. He did a great job in his match, by the way, too. Clark also gives us an inside look at the inner workings of the New Japan LA Dojo, how he ended up training there, what it was like to be a young boy, meaning a rookie in that scenario. He's also got some great stories about learning under Shibata, his first trip to Japan, and working his first official match at the Tokyo Dome. Clark also trained with Lance Storm, my old pal, and talks about all that he learned from Lance and how Lance still helps him to this day. Clark grew up in Seattle, shares where his love of wrestling came from, when he knew that was his path, and how he convinced his mom to let him pursue pro wrestling. Clark Connors coming up. Before we get going, Fozzy is heading out again this fall. Save the World Tour continues September 8th in Columbus, Ohio. We're crisscrossing in the States and doing some shows in Canada. FozzyRock.com has all the dates and ticket information, along with details on our legendary VIP meet and greets. Don't miss out. We're heading down under in November, December, New Zealand, Australia. Fozzy's coming. We're also coming to the UK in November, Ireland, Northern Ireland, Scotland, Wales, London. Come rock with us this fall. FozzyRock.com for all info, tickets, and VIP information. All right. Up and coming, Clark Connors from New Japan Pro Wrestling is here on Talk is Jericho. We've been talking for a while, Clark Connors and I, about doing Talk is Jericho, and what a strange journey it's been to get here. So did you reach out to me, or did I reach out to you first of all on Twitter? How did that work?
I think I'd added you on Twitter and Instagram, and I've been following you forever, but I remember I was at the gym and I saw a text message from you on Twitter, I believe, right. And it popped up, and I remember I haven't been that excited for something in a long time, so I had the best workout of my life, I'd say, after that one.
Well, that's cool, but so then we were going to do it while you were, because your schedule's busy because you're over in Japan, and we're like, well, let's do it, you know, I think we're supposed to do it next week or something like this, and then let's try it this time, and then here we are in person in Chicago. Because last minute, you get added to Forbidden Door. So kind of tell me that whole story about how that came about.
Yeah, no, I think we had talked about doing this maybe almost a month ago. You know, yeah. It was when it kind of started out. And then there was like, oh, I'm going over for Best of the Super Juniors and, you know, the time difference in Japan. So it's like, all right, let's wait on it a little bit. And then we're supposed to do it actually when I was back in Japan again because they called me back, which is a good sign, I think.
Of course.
And then here we go out of the blue. I got to get a, you know, last minute replacement opportunity here. And
when did you find out that you were going to be on the show?
Same time everyone else did. Yeah, it's, you know, New Japan style is I'm usually the last one to know.
Right.
Yeah, I found out and, you know.
She got hurt?
Yeah, yeah, and you know, I honestly don't even know how, because that dude is the toughest guy I've ever been in a ring with, maybe met in person, and so people were saying I Tonya Harding'd him, but I'm not gonna deny that or accept
confirm
it,
but, or deny
yeah,
it.
Confer deny.
So they told you you found out, when was it, like a couple days ago?
Yeah, I think so. Today's Sunday, yeah. So I think I found out on Thursday evening. So it was Thursday evening. Okay, we booked your flight for Saturday, their time. So I just got in last night, you know, went and ran and got a tan, and then here we are now, and I'm leaving tomorrow morning. So
back to Japan,
doing all.
So this is great. So did you basically start with New Japan during the lockdown? Like, how did that all? Like, is this your first time basically in Japan per se?
No, so I started out actually. So I've actually been working for them since 2018.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I was part of the inaugural LA Dojo.
Yeah.
Camp, the kind of the American expansion. So I was actually the first person Shibata picked up to join the American expansion in the LA Dojo. So I think July 4th, 2018 is when I signed my first contract. Mm-hmm. So it's been a very quiet 4 years. And yeah. So I've been to Japan before. I went over for G1 2019 and worked some undercard tag matches with Carl Fredericks and the other LA guys. And then went there a couple more times, but then obviously the world shut down. And so the Super Junior is my first time back because of whole litany of visa problems and the usual.
Because it was hard to get visas again, though, after the lockdown was over, basically, right?
Yeah. So I was kind of low on the totem pole on that visa list anyways. And my visa had just expired before the lockdown. So if we had gotten there a little sooner, yeah. I think I might have been a part of going over there a lot more and I would have got a little more exposure. But, you know, it is what it is. And, you know, here we are now.
Where are you from?
Originally Seattle, Washington.
Oh, okay. Did you used to work at like a pool that Alvarez used to go to
yeah,
or something
yeah,
like that?
Yeah, that's me. Yeah, no. it was Vinny's wife. I used to work as a personal trainer.
Right.
And I was sitting there and I was teaching a class, like a group fitness class. And his wife comes up to me. She's, you know, Bridget, nicest person in the world. And she was, she starts talking to me and she goes, what do you do other than this? I was like, well, I'm a pro wrestler. And she's like, no way. My husband does, you know, Brian and Vinny show. And, yeah. So basically she told Vinny about it and he's like, oh, okay. Some jabroni guy, or whatever. So she arranged us to hang out or whatever. And so it turned out, he's like, oh, this guy's actually, might be something eventually. You
right.
know, it was very early on when I was on the indies, but she ended up hiring me at her, swimming pool that she runs. And so I would teach basically just 80-year-old women. I'd be in the pool with them, you know,
doing
some
the yoga or whatever.
Run back and forth yeah. and, you know, just crawl, stroke, different stuff. It was fun. I loved it, man.
So let's talk a little bit about how you got into wrestling. Because like I said, like I know really nothing about any of you guys from the LA Dojo other than your names and that sort of thing. So how did you get into the business?
You know, I kind of start from square one, the little beginning story, you know, you're asking the hard hitting questions.
That's it, man.
Yeah. No, I think I was 12 when I first started watching wrestling, you know, the same as everybody else. Mm. My mom didn't like it and, you know, you're going to get stupid by watching it. And I snuck and watched SmackDown for the first time and instantly fell in love. I didn't miss an episode of anything for I don't know how many years until I was in college probably. But speaking of college, I played football at Cal Poly. And so before that, I was like, when I turned 18, I was like, Mom, I want to be a pro wrestler. And she's like, no, you're not. Not going to happen. Because like I had some opportunities, some offers from different schools, some money they were offering. So I was like, okay. And so she told me the deal was, all right, Clark, is if you go to college, you can do whatever you want afterwards. Just get your degree. So I said, okay. And so about 3 weeks before I graduate my senior year of college, she calls me. She goes, hey, I'm coming down for graduation. You got any jobs lined up? I was like, oh, yeah, no, I'm going to wrestling school. And credit to her. She says, all right, good to go.
Yeah. So where'd you go to wrestling school at?
Your good friend, Lance Storm Academy.
No kidding.
Yes,
I didn't
sir.
Know that.
Yeah, Lance
oh,
Storm
Oh, wow.
Academy.
I didn't know you were a Storm Wrestling Academy graduate.
I'm an alum. Yeah,
no
one
kidding.
Of the, one of the many. It's the, you know, to this day, I'd still say it's if, I mean, I know he's not running it anymore right now. He's on to bigger and better things, I guess. But I would say, yeah, that's the school to go to. He's the best.
Let's talk a little bit about that because that's one thing I've never really spoken in depth with one of Lance's students. So, because he had, obviously it was in Calgary. And I know he had some housing set up for the guys and all that sort of stuff. But how did you get, like, do you write him a letter, you write him an email? Or how does it work to get into the academy when it was up and running?
Yeah, no, so I think maybe 9 months before I even graduated and stuff. So it was like a year out before I looked on his website, you know, janky website. You know, Calgary, it was a Calgary website. I'll tell you that much, Alberta style. And I think I... I looked at it and I sent him basically just, I remember I have this picture of me. I was living in my RV at the time. And I have a picture of me just flexing on it. You know, he's just like, send me a picture of you, send me your goals or whatever. And in wrestling, what do you want to do? And so I sent him an email, and because it was booked out, you know,
right.
He was always booked out. And so, yeah, they sent me an email back like 3 weeks later, you know. Once again, I think it's just how long it takes for emails to get up there. I think someone actually has to hand them a letter and it go through the Eskimos, have to run through whatever it is.
Yeah.
But yeah.
The cloud is frozen up in Canada, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It had to thaw it out. Yeah. But yeah, so I got an email letter back, and so I booked it out basically a year in advance. So I, January 2017, I think, and as how I got up there, yeah.
So when you went up there, and there's like, I don't know, 15 students or 16 students total. So kind of tell me about the process and how was Lance as a trainer, and what did you learn quickly, and what were your problems at first?
So Lance, he just ascribes by just, you know, very old school style, I'd say, in the sense that I think there was 22 or so students there.
Yeah.
And all different levels. Some of the guys have been working for like 4 or 5 years on the indies and different places from all over the world. He attracts the Australians like more than anybody.
Yeah,
you know, he's good at that. You know, they love him down there. So there's probably like 6 Australian students been working for a while. But the first time I walked into a wrestling ring was I made a point of just like remembering the first day I walked into a wrestling ring. You know, it was January 4th, 2017. And so his setup was very like conditioning first, make sure you can do, you know, the basics, you know, run the rope, or not run the ropes. Before you even get that, it's just make sure you can do an exercise circuit a couple times around, you know, just so your physical condition. And then it was just base up, bumps, hitting the ropes, will take time. And then it's just like, okay, then we'll work on lockups, and we'll work on chain and X, Y, and Z. So I remember being in that camp, and it was, I was good at everything. I kind of understood it, but it was very awkward, you know, locking up. It didn't make sense because you watch it on TV, right? And it's just like, you don't think about it. Just like, oh, okay, what's going on next? I want to see, you know, a shoulder tackle. I want to see, you know,
moonsaults and drop kicks.
Yeah, where's the red arrow? Or
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Destroyer. But, just locking up was, I remember that was the first thing. That was my first hurdle. I was like, God, this is just step, do it. But like everything else, I think that was something I needed, because it was like it made it a challenge, right?
Well, you realize just how important the foundation and the basics are. Like anything else, you know, you're talking about playing football or whatever. Yeah. You can't throw, you know, a long bomb touchdown on your first day at, you know, at camp,
right.
First day on the field, right?
No, yeah, I think it's just that basic thing. And I think that's something that's missing from a lot of, you know, wrestling. And I'm glad to see a lot of the schools I've been to since, and the places I go and just check out. There is a lot of teaching of that, which I really think is important.
Yeah.
And but it was just from there on, it was like, once I kind of got that down, a lot of the little stuff like chaining just came to me. Selling just made sense. It just was like, that was just we taught very American style there, obviously, you know. And I stuck to that like glue. I you know, I was like, I just want to be a 80s baby face. You know? I was like, I didn't even know that's what I wanted. But once I got there, I was like, oh, I could sell forever. You know, that sounds like the most fun thing in the world.
So how long into it before you start having kind of like practice matches, I guess you'd say?
Oh, I think we went like at least a month and a half. And then it was like, okay, let's pair you up with someone and do 3-4 minutes, you know, whatever it was.
Yeah.
And just do a TV match more than anything. And once we started doing the matches, it was like, it actually came more easy to me, I think, as it's like telling a story, a little bit of structure, you know. Like, I mean, obviously it was, you know, tackle, drop down, leapfrog, hip toss, and that was it.
But that's how you learn, though.
But I know, and I think it, and to this day, I think that's the basis of everything. It's so easy. I mean, it's not, what we do is, what it comes down to is just, if you get the basis down, understand why that works, then everything else will just come.
Right.
I think, yeah.
So, and it was 3 months or 2 months?
Three months. 3 months in the dead of winter in Alberta.
Anybody else in the camp that did anything afterwards, or?
Who's doing? Some of the guys down in Australia are doing.
Gotcha.
I think they're still doing some
stuff.
A lot
of Australian cats.
Yeah, but for the most part, no one's really doing a whole lot.
So, what did Lance tell you, kind of as you get down towards the end of the camp?
So that's my favorite thing about his camps is, you know, he's exactly like he is in real life. You know him better than anybody. Yeah. It's like he'll tell it like it is, right?
Yeah. So very straightforward, right?
Famed last day, right? Is is he sits everybody down, so the 20 of us, and he'll just go down the list of what you need to work on, or like where he thinks you're at, you know. Mm-hmm. And so that was a blast. You just go around the room and he'll just tell people like, well, I think you probably, you didn't say quit, but he'd say maybe, you know, maybe you should really get some more training, you know, maybe take your time. And for me, it was, I remember he just said, you need to get bigger, you know. And so I started taking steroids immediately. No, I'm just kidding. No, but he said, you need to get bigger, but you're on your way. And I think that was just something for me. It was like, okay, you know,
right.
That's where I felt I was. And so here we are now, you know.
So does he give you any kind of like a list of names to call or anything? Or just you're on your own?
Yeah, at the time he did. It was there was actually like a like a database like he set up. Once again, a Canadian database. So it was a little janky. But like you could reach out to some of his former students or whatever it was. Yeah. And but for the most part, it was, you know, he would, and he's always open to text. If whenever he needed anything, like I can still text Lance this day. He actually texted me, you know, 2 days ago and said, hey, good luck on, you know, in your show. You know, he always keeps in touch, and I think that's awesome. But yeah, he's the main resource, I'd say.
That's great.
Yeah.
So where did you go after that then? So, you know, because I know for me, when I finished camp and you're out and then you got to start finding gigs, which might have been a little harder back before the internet, but I mean, there's a little bit more of an independent scene now, especially pre-lockdown. It seemed like it was pretty pretty busy, the scene.
So I actually moved back to Seattle area.
Yeah.
And that scene at the time was just kind of burgeoning again, because it was in this dead period from what I'd heard.
Yeah.
You know, everyone had said, it's been so dead.
Right, right, right.
So my little loop was mostly working in Canada at like All-Star Wrestling.
Up in Vancouver?
In Vancouver, yeah. And then down in Oregon, there's a couple of little promotions down there. And then the big one was Defy.
Right.
Right. And they came on the scene just as I was kind of coming up. So what happened was I came down. And it's actually a funny story. My first gig was this company called Prestige Wrestling. I don't know if you've heard of them.
I think so.
Yeah, they're doing some really good stuff. And I was just emailing everybody, and half the companies were defunct. You know what I mean? I was out of the blue, because I had never done any independent stuff. I didn't watch independent wrestling. Yeah. I have no idea. And no one was really from that area, you know, that I had contacts with. So I just started hitting people up, and then the promoter of Prestige Wrestling, they're running their first show in Hermiston, Oregon, which you think Alberta's bad. You go to Hermiston. And went out to Hermiston, and I remember I got there a day, or he said, can you get here a day early? It's our first show, and if you could just help out. And I just wanted to help out, you know what I mean? Just pay my dues, whatever it was. And I said, okay. So I get down there a day early, and I get to this big warehouse, and nothing's set up, and I meet the guy, William. He's a good dude. He says, hey, how you doing? I say, hey, how you doing? And their ring is on the ground, like it hasn't been built yet. And he goes, hey, by the way, do you know how to set up a ring? I say, well, kinda, because at Storm, we would help out at the local shows up there and teach us how to set up a ring, pay your dues, all that. So I said, okay. So I basically helped put the ring together for them, and I think I've messed it up pretty bad, to tell you the truth. I think it's still a little messed up to this day. But so I set it up. I remember I slept in my car that night, because I was like, that's what you do when you're on the indies. And I don't know. And the next day I come to the show, keep helping out. And I remember before the show started, he comes up to me, because they had opened doors like 2 hours before the show started, because they want to do a VIP thing. And he comes up to me, he goes, Clark, hey man, do you want to do a match? I was like, yeah, I want to do a match, you know. And so there was another guy who was at Storm Academy down there, because he actually he lived in Hermiston. So it was kind of something where he had kind of hooked right. it up, right? And he tells the other kid, he goes, do you want to do a match? And he was, you know, a little worried about it. And I tell him, I was like, Nick, we're doing this match. He said, okay. I'm like, I'm going to be a heel. You're a babyface. Let's go just do exactly what we do at Storm. He says, okay. So it's like the pre-show match. So it was actually the first inaugural match of this card. We go out there, and it was a curtain sellout, you know, I mean, all of us like, oh, two guys who've never wrestled before
yeah, let's watch this.
Are going to be the first match in the card. And I remember I came to the back, and, you know, I was like, you know, thanked everybody or whatever. And I don't know if it's online or anything. It was probably terrible, but you know, it was. I felt I was so happy about it. You know,
that's the most important thing. How did it feel for you?
I felt good, yeah. And in retrospect, I know a lot of those people now who were there, and they were like, "Yeah, dude, it was actually not bad." You know, what I mean, you did your thing, and I was like, "Okay, this kid might be something." And so I always joke. I was like, every time I see that promoter, I say, "William, you're an idiot, dude. Your first ever match, you put two people who had never, you know, been in a ring before in front of people in there, but." It ended up working out. So
yeah, once you get that first under your belt, I remember the first match I had. It was actually with Lance. And I remember just like, there's probably, I don't know, 70 people there, but like three of them were cheering my name or whatever it was. I was just like, this is great. that kid was cheering my name. I love this, you know?
Right, yeah. It's just yeah. like, it's like a draw, mm-hmm. right? And it's like... I found that I have a very addictive personality and that wrestling is my favorite of, you know, my addictions. It's like, there's nothing like hearing people call
the
roar
of the crowd, like, oh, right? Yeah.
God. Or, you know, if you're being a heel and they're booing you, like, oh my God, that's like.
Yeah, the boos are our cheers when you're a heel. So when you start to expand your area out of Seattle, like how do you end up kind of in the LA dojo?
So from that first show, I started working a little bit more often. I actually got in with, you know, Buddy Wayne is?
Yeah, of course.
Nick Wayne's dad, yeah. right? And so he was, you know, rest in peace. He was still alive at the time. He was running his school. And in my opinion, in the opinion of many, it's the best school in Pacific Northwest.
And it was more in the Washington,
right?
It wasn't in Canada.
It wasn't in Canada.
Because I used to see Buddy all the time up in Winnipeg. He was working up there and in Vancouver, obviously.
Yeah. So, yeah, I was lucky enough to get in with those guys. And, you know, to this day, they're some of my favorite people in the world. And I'm so blessed to... You know, Shayna and everybody up there, and still it's like a family, you know.
That's cool.
And so I started training with them, and they kind of got me into the different, you know, the different promotions in the area, the local promotions. And I remember one day I get to class, we're training a little bit, and then Invictus Cash now and Classic Cody Chun, some of the other guys, they tell me, like, hey, you want to go do this camp, this New Japan camp? And I was like, to tell you the truth, I didn't know anything about New Japan at the time. I was an American, you know, I love American wrestling.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like, it's a good opportunity. And all I've known is if there's an opportunity, you jump at it, right?
Sure.
So I said, okay, I'll come down with you guys. And it was a 5-day camp, fly down to LA. And at this point, I'd only literally done Oregon, Washington, Canada, right? And I get down there. And I have an amateur background wrestling, too, and just an athlete. And, I had the tools that Shibata wanted to see. And so after the end of the 5 days, you know, he just goes, hey, do you want to come back for another tryout, basically? And I didn't even know it was going to be a tryout. I thought it was just like a big, long seminar. Or whatever.
Right,
and I
right,
was just
right,
like,
right.
But, you know, I just treat it seriously, take it seriously. And at the end of it, I was just like, he says that. I'm like, I tell the guys, I'm like, go back to the car. I'm like, wait, guys, Shibata asked me if I can come back. And they're like, you know, it was really cool.
What kind of stuff did you do during those 5 days?
Honestly, we just... shoot wrestled, gotcha. Pretty much. You know, it was that's what I tell people is LA Dojo, especially if you want to join New Japan, especially through LA Dojo, it was literally just about, it's not about if you can do, you know, all those moves we were talking about before. It's your heart, you know, and it means it. Shibata-san has a this inclination about wrestling and about wrestlers, and he can see it. And everyone who's joined the LA Dojo, it's just like, oh, they have something. I don't know what it is, but they have this fire, this passion. We just call it heart, you know, that's the translation basically.
Yeah.
It's just like, and so, yeah, it was just basically we shoot wrestled pretty much every day. And then we got as far as maybe lock up, headlock, shoot rope, tackle. That's it, you know? And then it was funny because on the last day we did, tryout matches, quote unquote. Everyone puts their gear on, and I remember Shibata said, the first thing he says, okay, please show me what you've learned, basically. And the first match that goes out there, the first guys come out there, a couple big stars at the time, you know, I can't remember exactly who it was, and they go out there and do a, like, 6 or 8 minute New Japan match, strong style, follow, clothesline, duck, 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 bong, you know, big move.
Right, right.
And I remember in Shibata, I just looked over at Shibata and I think Kishida was there at the time too. And they were just, and he just had his head kind of in his hands. Mm-hmm. He's like, what the hell's going on here? So I looked at it and I was like, okay, so for my match, I was actually wrestling a guy, Sean Moore. He's phenomenal. He's actually Alberta based or Winnipeg, one of those places up there. And I remember we just went in there and we just shoot wrestled for like 3 minutes, headlock, drop down or whatever, shoot off, tackle, and then we just did like a finish. And I remember afterwards, and I just like looked at Shibata, and he just had a smile on his face. He's like, "You did what I asked you to do, and you showed the fire and the passion." Hmm. And I was like, "Oh, okay." That was like an eye opener for me. I was like, "Oh, that's what this is," you know?
Right. So he asked you to come back for another tryout?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I came back maybe, I don't know, a month later, you know, and it was like another camp, because they were running camps at the time, but it was definitely different, you know, where he would like have me like lead the drills a little bit, like, well, not lead, but be the first one in line and that kind of thing. So like, I knew there was, you know, there was a spotlight on me, and there was, at this point, I was like, oh, there's a chance for a job here, you know? Because honestly, I think the original inclination of the LA expansion was, they weren't supposed to have like sign wrestlers for a year or 2 years, but myself, and there's a couple other guys, Alex Coughlin, one of them, he came to the next camp, where I was like, oh no, these guys are, we got some people who can do this
thing. Right.
So we expedited the process basically. And so at that point he was just like, after that camp, he said, hey man, do you want a job basically? And I was like, yeah, I want a job. Yeah. Okay. Get paid to do this like full time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, and then we went from there.
That's something that's cool about Japan. It's always been that way, is they like to find foreign stars that aren't being used anywhere else. And if you look through the pantheon, like I did it, and Eddie Guerrero did it, and Malenko and Benoit and Mysterio, and the list goes on and on and on, all the way to Ospreay and Kenny Omega, and even the Bucks prior to AEW, there was always this pocket of you know, foreign gaijin, whatever we're called nowadays, that they take great pride in building the names of these guys. Jay White is one currently, and it's a good spot to be in, because like I always say to people, like WWE or AEW, we're not going anywhere. There's no rush. So learn a different style, get some life lessons. You know, it's a different view of things when you work there.
Yeah, no, 100%. It was interesting too, because it's so ground up. Like you said, like we went there and then did the camps, whatever it was, and I had really. I mean, I was only a year and a half into the business, but I was really finding my groove. I'd worked a little bit of babyface, worked a little bit of heel, you know, and just would sell my ass off, right, you know, yeah, very American style. And basically Shibata's son was like, okay, well, you're signed now. Forget everything you've ever learned. We're starting from square one. And we like I said, we did lock up to a tackle spot every day for like a month and a half. Like, and that was it for 5 hours a day.
Wow.
You know, I mean, that and shoot wrestling basically. And it was just like learning just the squats, push-ups, all that.
The bridges. You
know? Yeah, the bridges. Oh, the bridges. I can't do it anymore. I could flash PTSD. Yeah. But I can't go under a bridge anymore.
Right.
Tweaking. No, but it's just very bare bones basic. And so we stripped away everything and we relearned everything. Almost so to the point where I'm like, sometimes I forget how to do it the other way, you know,
because
I've been so locked in. But and then the culture too, it's just like we lived the Japanese young boy lifestyle, you know. We
so
just,
explain what that
sure,
is.
Sure, yeah. Oh, once again, PTSD. No, but
you had the dojo in Tokyo, yeah. Or okay,
no, gotcha. in a we had our own little dojo basically. So we
in
had
in LA. Oh, so you did the young boy experience in LA. So
which
tell
is,
about that.
Which is yeah. It was well so we're the guinea pigs. So
yeah.
Carl, myself and Carl Fredericks, myself and Alex Coughlin were the guinea pigs of this whole thing. So we go to wake up every morning, 8 AM, get to training by, you know, 8, 9 o'clock, and then we would train for 6 hours, you know. It was just like we would do, you know, at least 500 squats a day, you know, run a circuit. Yeah, I know. Yeah,
you're that's talking, so insane.
That was my knees talking. Yeah, that wasn't Chris. That was my knees. Yeah. Said, oh God.
We used to have to do that in camp. We started with like 50 and go up. Like try and do 10 right now, anybody listening, and then imagine doing 500 of those motherfuckers, and then showing up the next day and doing 500 again.
Yeah, and yeah. I mean, I'll tell you a quick little story about the about some squat stuff is Alex Coughlin is, I mean, if you see him wrestle, he's the strongest dude you've ever seen in your life. This is, so it was the camp that we both came back to. This is right when I kind of was meeting him. So at that point, we came back to the camp and we were actually got put up in the hotel together with Shibata. So not in the same room, but me and Alex were sharing a room, sleeping on the floor because there was, you know, it was just bed space or whatever. Right. There's another guy in there too. And so one of the days we weren't really given any instruction of like, you know, what to do like after camp or whatever it was. But one of the days Alex, he was friends with some of the guys at camp. So he went to the beach afterwards, we're in LA, you know, whatever. And I remember Shibata-san was just like, yesterday, come back to your room or whatever it was. And he was at a normal time, but he went out afterwards. And so we do our squats, the 500 squats as a group with the whole camp. And then Shibata-san points at Alex. He's like, you, keep squat. And he goes, yes, sir. And he keeps squatting. And we start doing rolls, whatever it was. We start doing bridges. And you can just hear it from the corner of the room. You hear 1,021. Hi. Because you have to scream after every rep. 1,022. Hi. And to the point where you forget. Like, it was just noise, you know? I forgot he was even doing it. And we go, we start doing, every once in a while I look over there and be like, oh my God, this guy's
a 1,000.
He's at 1,000 right now, whatever else. And then we're doing the next drill, we're getting water, still squatting. And then Shibata-san goes, okay, lunchtime. And we all go to lunch, and you just hear, 2,241.
Why wouldn't he stop? Hi.
Because Shibata-san didn't tell him to stop. He said, keep going.
Oh, my God.
And no shit, we go out to lunch, and Shibata-san comes out. And I remember he looks at me, and he goes, Alex, still squat? And I was like, yeah. He goes, oh, how many? I go peek my head inside, and he's like, 2,941. I was like, maybe 2,941. And he goes, he starts laughing. And he goes, okay, maybe 3,000, he stopped. I said, okay.
Wow.
So he did 3,000 plus squats. Jeez Louise,
that's insane.
It's insane.
Yeah. That is insane.
It's insane. So, and, you know, to put the bow on that story is the next day at camp, we do our squats again, and he's a bad motherfucker, dude. He did another 500, and then we start rolling. Shibata goes, Alex, wall squat. And he makes him just go to the wall and wall squat. So, I mean, at this point, he did 3,000 squats the day before.
Yeah,
He had him hold a wall squat. And at this point, I was like, kept looking at the clock and everything. And he makes Alex put his arms up like Frankenstein when he's doing it too, right? And Shibata walks over, grabs a bottle of water, takes two caps and puts it on the top of his hands, pours the water in the caps, and he says, no spill.
Wow.
And then he goes, and Alex is like, yes, sir. Boom. And he did, and I think it was like a 17-minute wall squat. And he goes, okay, you finish. And Alex, being the badass that he is, he Frankenstein walks with his hands up all the way across the room to the sink and pours out the water and just gets in line and starts doing the next drill. And I was like, and that was our initiation.
Right.
This is LA Dojo. So the bar is set that level and everything was like that. It was strict. It was hard. You know?
What's amazing they had it in LA too, they didn't send you to Japan for the dojo.
No, it was totally Shibata-san's thing.
Right.
It was like, do what you will with these guys, you know, and if anyone knows his style, it's like.
Well, now Shibata, just for people that don't know, was a great wrestler who then had a head issue, concussion issues, so had to retire.
Yeah.
And then became a trainer.
Exactly, yeah. And he's, you know, working his way back through it, you know, kind of similar to what, you know, I think it was Danielson,
right. He's working his way back into the ring.
Yeah, he actually did a little, like kind of an unsanctioned match at WrestleCon.
I heard that. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Him and Ren Narita did a little something, you know. And but yeah, so it's his style, and which is anyone who knows it is just like it's gonna be badass.
So you're obviously, because the Japanese discipline for wrestling, and once again, I had it too, not to this extent, but you know, you get a different respect for the business. Yeah. You know what I mean? It really does weed out any pretenders if you train with the Japanese. I mean, training with Lance is definitely a great start, but then also going to the dojo too. Like, you really got to want this, because you do kind of get stripped of all your pride and all your self-respect in a lot of ways.
Dude, yeah. Like, I always joke, like, when I was 22, I was so cool. I, you know, I was I lived in an RV on the beach. I drove a motorcycle, you know. And then by the time I was 26 in the dojo, we weren't allowed to go outside without permission.
Jeez,
we were stuck in our rooms. Like, you know, Carl was 30 at the time. We're all, you know, sitting in our late, you know, getting in our late 20s, early 30s. And we're just like, well, we're not allowed to go outside. And we're just going to sit in here after training and make chonko for this Japanese man. You know, make him food, and then we're gonna clean the house, and then we're gonna go to our work's gonna be getting our ass kicked for 7 hours.
Good Lord.
Cleaning the dojo and then doing it again.
And why weren't you allowed to go outside?
It's just Japanese style. Yeah. It's very, you know, it's regimented, and it's meant to break you down, you know? And it did. Yeah. And it did, but it makes a bond, you know, with wrestling and with your, you know, fellow compatriots going through it, you know. Those guys are my family now.
Well, obviously,
you know,
yeah.
I mean, we literally share a family plan on T-Mobile. So
what was it like then with your first time in Japan? You finally get a chance to go, because when you're doing all this training, are you still doing independent shows or still having matches outside of the dojo, or you just specifically train?
Yeah, we literally trained for maybe a full year.
Wow.
Anything, yeah. And then it was like very, you know, the company would put, like, give us a chance with Ring of Honor, or like, it was all their bookings, no independence.
Gotcha. So they would book you in those places. They were getting reps.
Yeah, just to get a couple reps here and there, yeah. You know, or just wrestle on their shows, you know. We wrestled, like, Alex and I wrestled maybe, I was like 3 months after our initial, we had a dark match at one of the shows in LA. But other than that, it was pretty much just like go in training, which is makes it that much harder, because you're right. Like, where's the light at the end of the tunnel? But yeah, first time in Japan, it was an eye opener. It was like our chance to like show everybody, you know, all that we had learned from Shibata-san. It was a pride thing for him too. He was like our dad.
Oh yeah,
like,
for sure.
We're trying to impress him. We otsukaresama desu, you know, very speaking Japanese to everybody, you know, doing our best. And you know, just everything was just like military, you know. When the Japanese wrestlers would come over to America, we would be these over the top. They would think, these guys are nuts, you know, because we'd be so over the top, because we didn't know have a frame of reference for what a young lion's supposed to be. So we went above and beyond. We'd be, when people would walk into the locker room and say, otsukaresama desu, and we'd scream it, because that's what you're supposed to do, you know. And
great call, very military.
Very military, yeah. And we to, you know, to his credit, like, we looked phenomenal, you know what I mean? Like, we came in just like, and everybody was like, who the hell are these guys?
Right.
You know, we came in just shredded out of our heads. We could, you know, do the young lion match like this easily. So when we got over there, it was cool to see the fruits of our labor pay off a little bit. But that was a month-long G1 tour, you know, and that's the hardest one we got. And it was just like every day before the shows, we would train hard for like an hour and a half. And then it was like, we would, if we had a match, we'd go do our match, and then we would change really quickly and go sit at ringside and young boy.
Right.
And then if we didn't have a match, we would train even harder before the show and then go sit at ringside and young boy.
Wow.
It was just, I mean, it was the most grueling thing, but it was in the moment, it was just like, it's almost cultish where you're just like, yeah, you're so into it. You're just like, we got to do it. You know,
it's a great point. Yeah. Yeah. It very much is a cult type, which is funny, because I remember you talk about Ishii. He was a young boy for WR when I worked for Tenru. And that's why when I first saw him again, I was like, oh my God, it's the same guy. And like, you know, but that's how you learn. So when you get to the higher positions, you still have, once again, we talked about learning from Lance, the foundations and you know, the basics, not just in moves, but also in attitude and mindset and respect for the business.
Yeah, more so than anything, I think it's that respect factor.
Right.
I remember these guys are like, they've all been through it, you know? And so like, once you get to the other side, it's that you actually see the light at the end of the tunnel. And then once you finally get there, it's just like, this washes over you. Like, oh, being a pro wrestler ain't too bad, huh? Like, this is kind of fun, you know? So I think that's the most important thing, is just getting that, like, that respect for like the, how hard you should work. So that's why it's like, it bothers the hell out of me when I say people who don't try, you know, when they just kind of go out there and put on some gym shorts and go wrestle, you know.
Yeah,
I'm like, guys, like, this should be hard, you know. I mean, and obviously I want everyone to be able to follow their dreams and do it, but I think there's a certain bar that needs to be reached to help this business grow forever, you know. I think that's important.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so who are you working when you're over there? Are you just working with the other guys from the Shibata dojo, or did you work with some Japanese guys too?
Mostly Japanese guys. Yeah. So I tagged with Carl the whole time, and just like, you know, six mans mostly, and then we'd wrestle some of the young lions over there. But yeah, we got a taste of the whole roster, you know, and that was cool. I mean, obviously the matches are a little different when you're a young lion, you know, you can only do like four moves, you know what I mean? Like,
and then explain that they restrict you, which is something that people won't believe. Like here you see 1,000 moves a match, but when you're a New Japan young lion, what are you allowed to do?
So the basis is tackle. You can do hip toss and body slam. And the big one, your big false is a drop kick. And then slap on a Boston Crab.
Oh, my gosh.
And so that teaches you how to make the most out of everything. You know, it's about, once again, your heart, right? It teaches you how to make a moment out of a body slam. You know, you one body slam and you throw the fire out to the world. And it's like, it's if you can make it believable that, like, oh, he might win by body slamming Tanahashi and then Boston crabbing. And if you could do that, like, shit, imagine what you can do if you can, you know, do a power bomb or whatever it is, you know? So it's cool. And it teaches you just make the most out of every moment when you're in there. You know?
That's really cool. I never realized that before. So you did get a chance to work with some of the bigger names, the Tanahashi you mentioned and those type of guys.
Yeah, Tana was the first one we got over there. It was actually Carl, myself, and Kenta. On his comeback match versus Tana and a couple of the young boys. But yeah, I wrestled, Tana, you know, Sonata, Naito, Zack Sabre Jr., all the big ones, Okada, you know.
How do those guys treat you?
You know what's funny is they understand the process so much, and they know Shibata. So they're so nice. I mean, for the most part, right? They understand, like, okay, these guys are, it's like, you know, he's like, they're getting their ass kicked at home. Let's take care of them, you know? kind of feel bad. But at the same time, like, when it gets in the ring, we go to work and we you know, smack the shit out of each other, mm-hmm. whatever it is, you know, New Japan stuff.
Right.
But, yeah.
So what was your longest tour that you did there?
That would be it, I think. That was the
G1, long, that's a month.
G1. But so I think the Super Juniors I just did was my longest actually, like, kind of being...
And you're in the tournament.
In the tournament. So that was my most grueling, per se, because it was, you know, we just did 12 singles matches in a row, you know. And so that was definitely a new experience. And so I think I'm finally, my back feels fine now, today. But
I did that in 97, Best of the Super Junior.
Yeah?
Yeah, your Samurai one, El Samurai.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah. Who won this year?
It was a Hiromu.
Gotcha.
Takahashi, yeah. And it was good. My main thing was I just wanted to go in there. I just wanted to show everybody, like, okay, I can do all this stuff. I've reintroduced myself. And obviously I wanted to win the thing. You know, don't get me wrong. But it was like, I think I did a good job of just reintroducing myself to the world. You know, this is like the first time I finally came out with a full entrance thing. You know, I did some poses and whatever it was. You know, did the pro wrestling thing.
That's part of it too.
It is.
Yeah.
And that's the thing you don't get when you're doing the young lion thing. It's just like, you, like, especially Shibata young lion, because Shibata's big gimmick was he's the wrestler. You know? And his t-shirt was like Times New Roman font.
Yeah.
He said the wrestler, you know? So, you know, a lot of that stuff, the flashier stuff's a little different. You know, I got to learn that on our own a little bit.
Right.
But this was the first time I really got to kind of be myself. And
so are you still in the category of a young lion, or how long does that last for?
No, so I graduated from the dojo actually like a year and a half ago.
Okay, so now you're done with that.
Yes, so I'm now the wild rhino, Clark Connors. You know? But you know, it's still a caste system a little bit.
Sure it is.
Over there, right? And you got to prove yourself. And so, you know, this opportunity I'm going into Forbidden Door is just like, I mean, you know, by hook or by crook, I that's my chance to show everybody, like, oh yeah, this isn't a young lion anymore. Mm-hmm. This isn't, to show America especially, because I think I did a pretty good job in Japan of doing that. But now it's like, all right, guys, hey, you know, I not know who I am, but you know what, you're about to.
But there's some buzz that going about you guys though. Like, I've heard about you guys for a while. Is there four of you or three? Alice Coughlin, Fredericks,
and myself, Clark. And Gabriel Kidd.
Gotcha. Yeah.
He came in like kind of our second class. And we got some, you know, Ren Narita's now LA Dojo, so is Yuya Uemura, Kevin Knight, DKC is like our whole clique right now. But right now, yeah, I think myself and Coughlin
and Carl
are kind of like pushed out of that.
So are you guys you signed a contract with New Japan?
Yeah, so I've actually been under contract for 4 years. Yeah.
So what do you do when you're not on tour with Japan? Can you work other places, or do they have to book it for you?
Yeah, no, column A, column B, you know, a little bit.
Yeah.
But, you know, I I'm open for work if anyone wants to book me. Just DM me on Twitter at Clark Connors. No, but yeah, we can work. Obviously, there's, you know, restrictions and boundaries and reasons, but New Japan comes first, for sure. And then, you know, working with you guys here has been phenomenal, you know, great talent over here. I'm really excited. I want to do a lot more of that, mixing it up with you guys. Yeah, and basically kind of work wherever, just in the States mostly, or, you know, not in
Japan. So what did you think of Japan as a country and as a culture? And because it's a little bit strange at first.
Yeah, no, it's
to say the least.
A little bit strange, yeah. It's different. I think I fit in well over there, you know, once I got used to it. It's a very go lifestyle when you're on tour.
Yeah,
you know? I mean, and you would know, like when you're over there, it's just like, okay, you do your show, you get your workout in beforehand, and then it's just like sponsor dinner, right? You know, for those who don't know, it's over there. A lot of times after the shows, someone, you know, a fan will, who you've reached out with or something, will reach out to you, will take you out to a nice dinner, and then it's, you go to dinner and you put on a show there too, where you just, you know, and you know, you just drink your ass off, and you get them hammered drunk, and they take care of everything, which is nice.
Yeah, it's
and
a status symbol for them to hang out with wrestlers, basically.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And so that's a big LA Dojo thing, is we like to party. You know what I mean? When I say I'm the wild rhino, you know, it comes from a place of, okay, we like to go, we go hard in the ring, we go hard outside the ring,
right.
You know, safely and responsibly. but so you go to dinner, and then it's like you go to some, you know, the karaoke, and then you go to another drinking place. So you're out until 3-4 a.m. sometimes, and it's like, all right, next day I got to go to work.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
And it is what it is. So I think I adapt to that lifestyle well, versus over here where it's like, you know, you do TV and then, you know, maybe a road show or whatever it is. And then you kind of reset your week, versus over there, it's like 3 weeks straight of just go. And then you get a week or two
decompress. Right.
Yeah.
How many weeks a year do you spend over there?
Well, it's going to be probably up to half the year, I think, sooner or later. I mean, once again, I'm kind of getting back into it, you know, after the pandemic. But I'm assuming I'm going to be over there at least, you know, 5 months out of the year, probably in 3 month intervals.
Yeah.
It's, you know, totally up to whoever's booking.
What's the weirdest thing you've seen in Japan?
So, well, nothing I want to say on here. But the PG version, I'd say there's no ping pong balls on this one. But but eating... eating horse.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was my favorite. We were in like Fukuoka or something, and we're eating raw horse, like sashimi, and ended up being one of my favorite foods over there. It's delicious. I think we should eat horse over here. You know?
Yeah, there's a lot of those types of things. I remember the last time I was looking for, I was trying to take my wife to Yakiniku and the Korean barbecue, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But classic Japan miscommunication, they literally took us to a legitimate Korean barbecue, not a yakiniku place where you cook like an actual, like, oh, you want Korean barbecue? What is that? And they took us to a place where everything on the menu was literally like cow vagina, cow uterus. I'm not even kidding. Like, this was on the menu. My wife's like, why would you bring me here? I'm like, this is not what I was hoping for. We want yakiniku, Korean barbecue. And they took me to a Korean place with like some barbecue stuff. It was very strange.
There's some ribs or something.
Yeah, too. Yeah, yeah, something like that. Yeah. Exactly. So what's your now, you know, like you said, tonight's a huge match. And what exactly is the match tonight?
So it's the All-Atlantic title match.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. So it's going to be myself, Miro,
Malachi,
and Pac.
Wow. Do you know any of those guys?
I've never met any of them, no. So it's going to be fun. Yeah. Hey, guys, I'm not Tamahiro Ishii. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, exactly.
I look at it. I've watched their stuff. You know, I've watched, you know, growing up, I watched, you know, Rusev and, you know, and Pac doing his thing over there. And so it's like, okay, these are guys, I know what they can do and I know what I can do. And so I'm really excited to go out there and show everybody there's a reason I should be on this card, you know, and it's not trying to be a cocky thing, but it's just like
you have to be that way.
Right. But yeah. It's something that I know in my heart, you know, I'm ready to rock, you know, and it's just been a matter of time at this point.
And was it a New Japan decision to send you, or was it AEW agreeing, or here's your ticket. Yeah.
They said, hey, are you okay to come over? And I said, yeah. What am I going to say? No.
Cause you had a match with Ishii.
I did.
To
the qualifier
right?
Qualifier match with Ishii. But, so I lost. you know, but and second chances don't come often, I've found in life and in this business. And it's just one of those things where it's what do they say, luck is a preparation and some timing and preparation,
that's it, something along something those like lines that. Yeah
so right now I feel like the luckiest guy in the world, so I'm gonna make the most of it, you know. And and whoever decided to send me over, thank you. And yeah, I'm
gonna is this the biggest show of your career tonight, you think?
Yeah it's gotta be. I've stepped out the United Center because I was at the Madison Square Garden show we did with Ring of Honor.
Yeah.
But I was just young boy in it, you know. So right. I just was sitting there and just taking it in, and I was like, "Oh my God, this is it," you know. And we did the show in the G1 in Dallas in 2019, and I did the same thing, and I was just sitting there like, "Oh, I can do this. I'm ready to do this."
Mm-hmm.
And so this one's gonna be just like an explosion of just all of that, you know, and especially doing it with you guys, with AEW, I'm super excited. Like, you guys got some of the best fans in the world, and it's just like, all right, I don't know what they're gonna say when I come out, and I don't care, because by the end I'm.
It's a pretty knowledgeable fan base, though, and that's the thing. The fact you're in the match shows that you deserve to be here. You
sure, know? Yeah. I mean, yeah. I hope so, right? But yeah. I mean, yeah. Whoever's putting it together, the powers that be, at least. Have their pulse on everybody. So hopefully I can.
Is your family excited?
Yeah.
Does this make it legit now?
I thought that my mom coming to a Defy show in front of 600 people was the one, but yeah. I think this one is for everybody. You know, for me, it's just like, this is the big one. You know, and you know, win, lose, or draw, it doesn't matter for me. I mean, obviously win.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But
it doesn't matter though.
But it's I need to get my, you know, this is it. You know?
Yeah, this is the big spotlight for you. Yeah. Last few things. So, you know, what is your overall plan for your career? I mean, obviously Japan is a great place to be. It's a great place to work, but you're also American.
Yeah.
Is your overall goal to eventually work in the States?
Yeah. I mean, at this point I'm taking it a day at a time.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up on WWE, you know, and so that's always in the back of my mind, but I don't care about that at all,
yeah.
You know, right now. And right now, I'm literally, New Japan has treated me so well, you know, and I love working there. And so my goal is to be the best wrestler I can be and make a shitload of money in this
business. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's, because that's how I look at being a your success as a wrestler.
Well, that's what the business is all about.
No, exactly. So like when people ask me, like, they say, well, what do you want to do? And I'm like, I give them the answer of like, I want to be the best wrestler in the world. But what that, to me, that just means make as much money as possible.
And it's part and parcel.
Isn't it? Like, yeah. In this business, it's just like, it's not like, you know, like, well, you won a bunch of matches. Like, oh,
yeah.
Really? Well,
yeah.
That means I'm really good at wrestling.
Yeah. You
know? No, it's for me, it's like, I want to make the most money I can and do this until artistically I don't like doing it anymore.
Yeah. See, but that's a good mindset to have, because a lot of people think differently, but it really is a business. And yes, you want to be the best. But when you're the best, if you're the best quarterback in the league, you're Tom Brady, you get paid millions of dollars.
Yeah.
You know, if you're the best guitar player in the world, Eddie Van Halen, you make a lot of money doing it. And that's, once again, part of why you spend so much time training in the dojo, learning, getting respect, because that all will add to your overall, you know, overall,
je ne sais quoi.
Yeah, je ne sais quoi. Good call. Exactly.
Yeah. No, yeah, that's a big part of it. Like, when, you know, every that we would tell each other in the dojo is like, Alex and myself and Carl would always say, dude, we're putting in the work. And we'd always say, when we were tired as fuck, we'd yell at each other, this is how we eat. This is how we eat. Because this is how we make money.
Yeah.
We put in the work now, and hopefully the fans will see that at some level, you know, and other promoters and other everything. And they'll see like, hey, no, we're here for the business. We're here because we pushed ourselves and worked hard. So, you know, if we can, you know, get compensated as such in the future, that would be very nice.
It's cool though to me that this lineage of the foreign guys training in Japan, like I said, for as long as I can remember, even back when I used to watch Stampede Wrestling out of Calgary, and you'd see a lot of the Japanese guys, but Owen Hart went over there a lot, and you know, and Brian Pillman was over there, and it's just like, it's just cool that the generations continue and there's still Clark Connors and Fredericks and Coughlin that are specifically New Japan guys from the States and from Canada. It's very cool.
No, I feel blessed to be part of that lineage, because they're all legends in this industry.
Yeah.
Yourself included, obviously. It's just like, these are the guys that I had, it just so happened, and I didn't know shit about Japanese wrestling, but I'd look at that now, looking back on them, I'm like, oh, Benoit's over there,
yeah.
You're over there, Owen Hart. Eddie, you know,
it's like, Lance, all of us, yeah.
Yeah, and it was just like all these guys, and I'm like, these are the guys that I look up to. These are the guys that I emulate my career after, you know, inside and outside of the ring, you know, and so it's like, okay, yeah, man. Like,
it's good life lessons too,
sure.
You know, like learning how to live in another culture and being over there and just, you know, how do you get something to eat or how do you talk to a girl or how do you, you know, all that stuff. It really just enriches your whole experience.
No, yeah, and I think, and I do, to piggyback on that, I think wrestling in general needs more of that. I think too many people just get into wrestling because they just like wrestling, but they don't have life experience.
Right.
I've found that, like, I'm so glad my mom made me go to college.
Yeah.
You know, like, I love, you know, I know how to talk to a girl, and I know how to, you know, what it's like to, like, maybe look for a job or work two jobs at a time, whatever it is. And so I take that and I bring it to myself as a character. So I'm not just like, I'm Clark Connors and I know how to do a, you know, a sharpshooter really well. You know, it's like, no, I'm a fully formed human, an adult, you know? And so when I go over there too, it's just all this learning. And like when I'm in my matches, it's funny because I'll just be speaking Japanese, you know, just because it's just like, in, you know, I'm like, Kura, come on. You know?
Yeah. Can you speak Japanese?
Sakoshi Nihongo.
I'll tell you. Oh, wow. That's pretty good.
Yeah, pretty much. No, but I can get by over there, you know. And,
is that because of the dojo or did you study? Or
I study it every day, man.
Yeah.
I take it seriously. You know?
See, I tried to learn. I think back then it was like whatever, Rosetta Stone. And it just was so hard. And the thing with Japanese too is it's different. Like Northern Japanese is different from Southern Japanese. Yeah. So, and the worst thing is when you, okay, I'm going to give this a try and I'm going to speak Japanese and you try it and they look at you like you are an idiot and you're like, I'm done. I can't do it anymore. Yeah. Right?
Dude, it's the worst. It's like, I'm at the point now too where it's like, I'm at the just enough Japanese where they think I'm like fluent and then they just come at me with it. And I'm like, oh, sorry. No.
No.
Otsukaresama desu. Yeah. Let's calm down a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. One beer to okudasai.
Yeah. I learned how to read it. Yeah. I learned how to read katakana.
Same.
Because that was at least I could communicate in some way, shape, or form. Because like I said, it really, because I spent a long time in Mexico. I learned how to speak Spanish. That was hard, but much easier than Japanese. Japanese is very hard to learn. You have to have a real ear for it. And like Kenny Omega speaks perfect Japanese. Yeah. And it amazes me how he's able to do that, you know? But it's, once again, like you said, I didn't want to be this foreign guy that's spending, you know, 20 weeks a year in Japan and just be a complete illiterate. So at least I could read something. You know, I'd read the Burn magazine, the music magazines, read Tokyo Sports, read the billboards or the trucks on the side of the road as we're on the highway. Just trying to, you know, learn.
No, that's all it is, I think, is just putting in the effort, you know, because I know people are just like, well, I'm just going to go over there and do it. And I'm like, no, it's just like anything else. Put in the effort.
Yes.
And it will, just because you can try your best, and then I hear that all the time, it's just like, gambate.
Try
your best, right?
Yeah.
And that's all I want to do is just like,
gambate,
right? And they all say, all the fans will say it, all the wrestlers will say it. And I'm like, that's all I got to do is I'm going to try my best, and then the fruits of my labor, you know, hopefully are rewarded.
Yeah. Are Alex and Carl on the show today, too?
Alex is. Alex. Alex can be on the
pre-show?
Pre-show, the buy-in.
Buy-in, yeah.
Yeah. So he's going to get to show off a little bit, which I'll be.
Is Carl jealous?
A little jealous.
Is he here?
No, Carl's not here. So gotcha. Carl's actually, he does a bunch of DJ and stuff too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, he'd be a very interesting guest for you to check out too. Yeah, because he's DJ and all stuff. So he's got a bunch of stuff going on. But,
gotcha.
But he, you know, he texted me this morning and said, miss you, man. I love you. And I said, I love you too, man. I'm going to show out.
Last question for you, man. What's your favorite match that you've ever had?
Oh, God. The next one.
That's a good answer.
Yeah, no, I think so. Yeah, it's just about, you know, doing. I've had some great matches with all the LA Dojo guys, which I'm really proud of. You know, just. But yeah, I think it's the next one. I think today is going to be the opportunity, and you know, just let's go do it.
Well, dude, it's great talking to you. We finally did it.
I know.
It's so funny how we just ended up meeting here, because like I said, we talked about it, we're supposed to do it over the phone, we saw each other in the elevator for the first time. Fate has followed us to this podcast, so
it had to happen. I'm glad it did.
Well, I'm happy for you, dude, man. I'm excited to see your match and you're gonna kill it.
Thank you, Chris.
All right.